I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. For the guy who knows everything, he's still got a lot to learn. Without further ado, here's Austin.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good night. I have no idea what time it is because this is a podcast and you're listening to podcasts whenever people listen to podcasts. This one is going to be exceptionally special because we're going to learn about a city that is very close to most of us, and I'm not going to butcher it. I'm going to allow the native, Toto Robinson, the bon vivant of New Orleans, to tell me, first to start, how do we pronounce New Orleans?
Uh-huh. You don't say Nolens.
Don't say Nolens.
Don't say Nolens.
Can I run down the street yelling, who dat?
You can. You can say who dat there and who dat here. Oh, yeah. No, who dat's, that's happening.
That's legit.
That comes from where you at, which is a historical point.
Okay.
Historical New Orleans doesn't make a lot of difference between it. So when in the long, years ago, you had the frats, the fraternity boys, and you had the local guys who were the yats, the where yats, because that's how we say it. Not how you doing, but where you at. So the yats would fight with the frats, and then...
Well, where's the who dats come if we got the yats and the frats?
When the football team came, the frats, they're up in the suites, but the yats are down there. Now they're who dats. Who dat is the where yat, and who dat going to beat them Saints?
Okay. We are literally.
It's a transmission.
We are 1 minute and 32.5 seconds into this podcast in New Orleans. And not only have I learned nothing, this is called A Lot to Learn with Austin Rogers. And I don't think I'm going to learn anything, but I think we're all going to be entertained. Toto, you are a lifelong, multi-generational New Orleans.
New Orleanian.
Yeah. Is that what we call us?
Yes.
Us, nice. Not you. Is that what we call you? New Orleanian. And this city, now I have not been here since before Katrina. And I stayed at a hotel, or I'm staying in a hotel in the Central Business District. And when I was last here, that was a no-fly zone. That was a shady place of boarded up office buildings. Oh my God, what a renaissance this city has had.
Yeah.
Talk about, you want to do the big one and talk about going through Katrina?
Sure, because it was a moment in life that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And it was a moment in life that most people don't have. It was a chance to be a hero. And who in life really has a chance to be a hero?
Not many.
Not many. And it happened so that it pulled people together. My son, Garner, came down from New York to help out, and we went together into no man's land because it was a, like, demilitarized zone. There were nothing but pet protection people, animal shelter people, and army, and, you know, Marines.
Literal army boots on the ground.
Yeah, right, patrolling with guns. So... there was nobody around. The red lights didn't work. The green lights didn't work. It was open field running. And there was an opportunity to help bring people back to work,
right,
to help get things restarted, to help, you know, the common man.
But this does not sound like, by the way, we are coming here from Toto's remarkably artistically appointed home in New Orleans. It is beautiful. And now pardon the joke after you gave us the tour, but there were light switches, but they weren't working, right? Like everything was going on, but you know, you couldn't flip the switch and make it all go back on. That takes an immense amount of infrastructure and people to do that, to bring New Orleans back online. What was the duration of this? Because frankly, us in the news media viewing public, we go, oh my God, terrible hurricane, and then yawn, moving on. How long was it?
Before the electricity came back on?
No, just in general, the recovery in general.
It was in different stages. I think, you know, the first 6 months were heroic, if you will.
Right.
And after that, business started being as usual, and it was the young people that came into town, and it was also the international focus. The photographs of New Orleans that were taken and the video that was shared throughout the world still 14 years later, right?
We got to talk about that in a little bit.
Is still what people ask you about. When I say I'm from New Orleans, and you know, I could be in Tallinn, Estonia.
Yep.
Where are you from? New Orleans. Oh. How y'all doing after Katrina? I'm going like, that was 14 years ago, man. It's over. We're totally recovered. We're better than we ever were. The food is better. The music is better. The art is better. The streets are not better. It's another problem we have down here. The sewage and water boy. That's not much better. But it was a very interesting time, and when I think about it, it was hopefully the only time in my life that I have an opportunity to be
a hero. And I don't intend to intrude on you to regale oneself in your heroism. Instead, I want to talk about the spirit that brought you together with your fellow New Orleanians. Did I get that right? New Orleanians. Because this is. This is one of the most, I have a major degree in American history with a concentration in slavery, right? That's why I studied. This city is one of the most remarkable cities, definitely on this continent, and if not in Earth, because I can't think of another place that has had France, then slave, then black culture, then white culture, then American culture, then disaster, all in a confluence of one place where
I can't... the Spanish.
Yeah, Spanish.
Oh, forgot the Spanish.
Right.
Oh my God, I can't even forget that. So tell me about, as a New Orleanian, tell me about what that means to you to be living literally in the hotbed of history, because we look out your street and we see these homes, mm-hmm. and half of me is like, they're incredibly beautiful, mm-hmm. and the other half of me is like, I think I know who built them.
Well,
I might be wrong.
You got to bring the word Creole into the conversation.
Right.
Okay, because and Creole means a lot of different things, depending on who you are and when you're talking in history. But we have been a city of mixture.
Yes.
From the very beginning, from the French giving over the control to the Spanish bringing in the Indians to, you know, we were a slave trade center. And let me digress. Slavery was a horrible institution. But as I grew up, you know, we were taught that, you know, we were kind to slaves, which was, of course, not true.
Right.
But the French were kinder to slaves than the Americans. The Americans came down here in 1803 and took over, and they started building, you know, huge plantations with vast hordes of enslaved people.
Right.
But the French had, you know, helper slaves, kitchen slaves, and they let their slaves work one day a week and earn money and buy freedom. And there were many, many people in New Orleans who bought their freedom and were able to, you know, as black people, marry and build. And, you know, most of New Orleans, those nice houses you're talking about.
Yep.
And some of the lower houses were built by Creoles who became tradesmen and
yep.
became skilled artisans, and they are the bedrock of the mixture that came in. So all the different mixtures, slaves, Indians, French, Spanish, came
right.
and kind of made a Creole gumbo. And those are the people that have stayed throughout all this history, and those are the people who are still the bedrock of New Orleans.
That's and you're completely right. At least from my historian background, like the Anglo-American slave system, and then the other the Franco then American slave system. You're totally right. Yes, there were immense amounts of rights and land ownership and everything and a design system of manumission. There was no manumission in that, but that is what sort of embodies New Orleans. And I think you just said it, because the national, you guys are sort of a nation unto yourself, aren't yes. you? The
We're
national
banana republic.
Yeah,
unto ourselves,
but
yes.
the gumbo. You guys embody the gumbo. You are just a mixture of everything.
Gumbo being whatever you can fetch from the swamp or the neighborhood or the grocery store or what's on sale. And that brings up another word. Who knows what lagniappe is?
I have no idea what lagniappe is.
Lagniappe, who can spell it? LAGNINAIPPE. It's a French word.
Uh-huh.
And in New Orleans, everybody knows what lagniappe is. It means a little something free. It means...
Wait, what? I have no idea what this is.
It's ironic because that was on the breakfast thingy today.
Was it? Lagniappe was on the...
Oh, yeah, it's on every menu. It's on every menu. It's we have
$9 for 2 eggs. Okay. Any style you want, $9. $3.
Mm. Lagniappe.
It's an iconic word that's used a whole lot in New Orleans. I've never seen it anywhere else in the world. It's a French word, and you ask any French person from France, and they never heard of it,
uh-huh.
and they don't understand it, and they think you're crazy when you say a little bit of something for free. But our tradition is that if you got bananas that are going to go bad tomorrow, you put them in your customer's grocery sack and say, here's your lagniappe. You know,
it's a linguistic evolutionary dead end, because it probably meant something somewhere along the line, but only this culture retained it.
The Creoles.
It's like a baker's dozen, but we don't remember what the baker.
Right. Why was there a baker's dozen? I don't know, but we know what
the baker used to give away the
13th.
The 13th for free. So that's the lagniappe.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. You have your own. We do not, in the rest of the United States, we have either a Latin Spanish linguistic influence, because we've got, like, you know, you drive across the arroyo. Everyone's like, arroyo. But we all know that means dry stream bread, right? Or you've got cities like Milwaukee. We know that's an Algonquin word. But you guys have your own, all of this language, right? Like, I still had to look up, because I forgot, because I hadn't eaten at a Cajun restaurant in a long time. I thought, you're going to kill me. Please do not kill me. Please do not kill me.
I'm ready.
I thought I forgot, and I thought a muffaletta. I thought a muffaletta was like a quiche.
Really?
Yeah.
Muffaletta. Muffaletta.
I can't even say it. I can't even say it.
And not many people can.
Talk about the word placage, because a lot of people here have forgotten what placage is.
Well, then it's from.
By the way, this is a family affair for those are listening. We've got a lot of divergent voices chiming in. But honestly, mm-hmm. that's by design, because we figured while we were figuring out what to do and what to talk about, we figured out this little cultural melange is the New Orleans way.
It's a party.
Yeah.
It's a party.
There is booze involved as well.
Yeah.
What was the word that you brought
placage.
Up? Placage.
So from lagniappe, which is a lost French word, placage is another system. And it was practiced when the French and then the Spanish were in New Orleans before the Americans came. And let's say second generation French started it. And it was a system by which young men born into a French family in the French Quarter stayed with the women. A young boy was in the kitchen with the women and with his mammy in the skirts, watching the cooking, being fed, coddled, etc., until the hormones started setting in and, you know, maybe growing a little beard, or it became obvious that you couldn't leave him with the women anymore. And so the men would take him, his father, his uncles, his older cousins, and one of the first things, well, they would teach him how to duel, they'd teach him how to sword fight, how to shoot, how to hunt. and the art of love. And by doing that, they would hire, they'd go to a woman of color, Creole, and say, you've got a beautiful daughter, and I'd like to hook her up with my son, my nephew, and we'll get them a little apartment in the French Quarter, and they can live together, and she can teach him, and he can love her. They can't get married. This is a system of placage, and this was a learning the art of lovemaking, and it was one of these unacknowledged but very regular routine social structures.
What?
So interracial.
Interracial.
Yes, but
almost yes, always interracial.
Because I'm assuming that the young French man who has moved out of the kitchen and the woman's domain into the placage domain, mm-hmm. this sounds like, frankly, an aristocratic sort of thing. Like the princeling takes the servant woman for his lover until
well,
he finds the
other. When you mention
no. Oh yeah, that yeah. she's this in this case.
She's
but what
real.
I'm thinking I'm extrapolating. Like it
right.
sounds to
yeah,
me like the Dauphin has that servant woman and he keeps her and he might love her but he can never marry her because
right.
he is the Dauphin of France, and he must marry that princess, right?
And I think
and these men are of this sort of strata as well.
It's another thing you really got to understand about New Orleans
right.
is you mentioned the word royalty
yes.
and the Dauphin. New Orleans is a colony. And,
yes.
And in a colony, you don't have to be real royalty of royal blood, but you can be local royalty of your own making. So I believe that a lot of these French families, Spanish families, created their own system of royalty, which today we call Mardi Gras.
Wait, what?
Because
hold on, no, come
yeah.
on, you're okay. No, I'm the king of making leaps of faith.
Yeah,
and that was Thelma and Louise going off a cliff in a Thunderbird right there. I am lost now. How? How is that self-made royalty, how does that become Mardi Gras?
How are you going to dig yourself out of this one, Dan?
Did I mention the word Rex? Yeah? So out of this Creole tradition and this this New Orleans, New World tradition came the celebration of Lent.
And, right.
Okay, we all know about Brazilian, Rio, Carnaval, and many Catholic cities still celebrate this.
Right.
This wonderful spiritual moment. New Orleans celebrates it as Fat Tuesday, and in that there's a whole very public and also subtly unspoken system of who gets to be the duke, who gets to be have their daughter be at the head of the line, who gets to be king of this parade. How many organizations are there today? They've got to be 30
more,
35, 40.
Right.
And
it's also a whole system of debutantes and
right.
you know, pecking orders and secret societies, and it's not just, you know, a lot of people think it's just Fat Tuesday when people are out catching beads.
No, but this is integral to your culture.
We get to be royals.
Right.
We get to be, you know, king for a day. Well, queen for a weekend.
Well, for those of you who haven't experienced Mardi Gras, and most people have not, and also most people who have been here for Mardi Gras also have not, because to us, the northerner or the guy from California, dude, bro, gotta go to Mardi Gras. And then there's the parades. Ooh, they're fun parades.
Right.
I didn't know there was any backstory behind these. I just thought, you know, oh, the local who'sy what'sy group gets together and they get their float and they throw out their beads. That's not real.
The royals have parties and they throw favors to the crowd.
Right.
So it's a way of pleasing the common man. It's a way of the royals, you know, gaining favor with the common man. And that's why when I when we first started talking, I described myself as, you know, one of the fun people in the crowd. Because being in the crowd, well, actually has its own subtle layer of royalty in the crowd. But it's like watching the king go by. You know, the emperor,
and there's something
with
to be
or without clothes.
There's something to be said to watch. Hey, I got to watch the king go by. That's
right.
That's almost
he
as cool.
He threw me something.
That's almost as cool as
he
being
waved
like,
to me. Yes.
I got to be the guy three people behind the king. I also got to see the king go by. I also got to get a favor from that. Oh, my God. This is mind-blowing because I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
And there's a lot of creativity that goes into it because so it started as something. It's grown into something else. And today, there's so much, how can I say, frivolity and comedy,
right,
and sarcasm and cynicism about it that happens at the same time and is displayed to all the people. So at the same time, we can revere royalty, we can also laugh at them. And
it's very self-aware.
It's,
On some level, it's totally not self-aware.
Yeah. It's self-aware with a lot of intoxication involved.
Okay. I always want to try to like add value and add like add depth to things, and you're like, no. It's got a really rich cultural tradition.
I'm always like, absolutely not.
And also, we literally are wasted.
Oh no! And then there's this piece. I mean, I've literally been with moms who have been crying in bathrooms and in beautiful carnival luncheons downtown because their daughter wasn't queen of something. You know, like. There's
a lot of anxiety around that royalty.
There's
yeah.
This weird
right.
thing that can happen, you know, because it's all about celebration and about the culture and all of that. And then there's just all of these layers of onions that you peel back.
But at the same time, you know, you don't want to be picked last on the kickball team, you
no.
know? So, oh, I get it. Okay. So. We've got Mardi Gras, mm-hmm. which is, you know, the king comes by, but it's also really, it's overtly religious because it is tied to the beginning of the Lenten era, right? Or the Lenten period of time, the 40 days and 40 nights. But now we've got, you know, French and Spanish and American and everything and black and white and Creole and mixtures and music and food. Let's mm-hmm. get into that.
Mm-hmm.
Your entire life has been spent here in mm-hmm. pretty much for the rest of the country, the envy of music and food, you know? Where's that come in?
Well, let's see what I'd say. For years, as I travel out of town and to foreign places, I used to bring my own food. Because you just couldn't get good food anywhere else. But now you can get good food anywhere else. But I still bring my own music
mm-hmm.
because we're immersed in it. We can hear from our front porch, we can hear high school bands practicing
yeah.
For Mardi Gras parades. We have venues that start at 7 o'clock in the evening for, you know, a certain set of people, and other places that start at 11:30. And there, throughout it, there's music. Throughout it, there's music for everyone. Our church has wonderful music. And not only religious music. They play jazz.
Just great music.
Yeah. So, you know, Parker has increased. I've been born here, raised here. I grew up dancing to the music here. And then, luckily, Parker came along into my life later, and she's deep into the New Orleans music, the production of it.
Parker's the lovely young woman who is chiming in right now,
right.
Exuberantly, and I love it because she's wearing, oh no, she's got her own microphone now. We made sure that happened because I think you guys are co-experts in this endeavor right here. And it's just so fascinating to have both of you guys be like, so in depth into the New Orleans. I'm being beckoned for a Basil Hayden, so I think I'll take that. Do you care, Parker, to talk about a little bit about the cultural melange that creates the New Orleans music scene? Because I don't think people get it. Because I don't.
Well, I just was so lucky. You know, I'm not from here, and I landed with this local family. But I'm so lucky because my journey with the music here began when I was put on the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival and Foundation Board, the mm-hmm. Jazz Fest here. And this year is our 50th year. And so I just was immersed in this when I moved here maybe 20-something years ago.
Talk about how if you go out, you can't really avoid.
You can't avoid it.
You can't avoid music, yeah.
No. Not only that, it's not like what you hear in New York and what you hear in L.A., which is all good, but kind of studio. This stuff is so soulful. I think it was Garner's birthday. We had guys in the backyard that were from the Meters, you know, who just...
I love the Meters.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
Just in the backyard.
What?
Just playing their brains out.
Because that's insane.
They like to play, and they love to play with each other. So they'll just like, you know, you call your... Everybody knows everybody here. So
right.
You call your friend who's a musician and you say...
And next thing you know...
Hey, we'd really love, you know, we have this little gathering. Would you, you know, pull together some guys? And then, you know, you have, it doesn't matter. You're going to have great musicians.
You have too much fun, you die, and there's more music.
Tell that story.
I actually want to hear about that, because one of the traditional tropes of non-New Orleanians is the New Orleans jazz funeral. And what it brings up to me is I remember being in a music studies class, right? And I think I was in either junior or senior year in high school, and they started playing music. And it was gamelan music of Indonesia. And the professor or teacher, because it's high school and they're not called professors then, they go, what does this evoke? And everyone, it's gamelan, so it's in like a polyrhythm, and it's in a major key to our ears, and everyone goes, oh, it's joyous and it's uplifting, and the teacher goes, no, this is Indonesian funeral music.
Mm-hmm. Joy.
This means that music is not an absolute language, so. Let's talk about the New Orleans funeral procession, which to me is like, that is the happiest music I've ever seen and watched in my life, but it's still a funeral.
You have that. You have the joy of...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Of people passing on to the other side, but there's a dirge in New Orleans funeral music. There's a very slow, you know, horse-drawn hearses, professional mourners, waving feathers, wearing black, and that's the slow, old dirge funeral music.
Right.
Right? And then you have a second line. And those there, now you have people who were joyously dancing, and maybe they knew the recently deceased, or maybe they knew the cousin, or maybe they don't. Maybe they just walked out of the grocery store at the right time.
What? I did not catch that word in the
cousin
middle.
Oh, we're all cousin.
No idea.
You might think of the word as cousin.
Oh, God. Yeah. Okay. Now I get it.
We're all cousin.
Okay. I am totally, yes. But I'm from the north.
Say, Gavon is not funeral music.
What's that?
It's not
funeral.
No, no, no. He played a gamelan funeral piece. Okay. Yeah.
I was just saying, it's not funeral.
No, 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 no. He played a gamelan funeral piece and said, why could this joyous music be funereal? And he goes, music is not absolute. And I think that's...
But that's the funeral. Whole deal.
Exactly.
Like, the dirge turns into...
Exactly.
So you have two of these songs and everyone's kind of walking slowly. Mm-hmm. And then
they associate it.
Then with, they keep rolling. Yeah. And they get into this whole other happy, you know, joy.
Right. Because as Toto said... Hey, they passed on and they're in a better place and this is fantastic.
And we're having a party.
And we're having a party.
That's, again.
Which is
a dance.
Again. Yeah, again. Again.
It's the free show.
I mean, it's
the free show.
It's the Irish wake. It's the Irish wake where you go,
it is.
Oh, well, you know what? Let's go tell some stories about the old man, you know, and you tell the stories and you make someone laugh harder and harder each time.
Yeah.
You guys just happen to do it with music.
Yeah.
Oh, he's gone. It's so bad. But by the way, here's the music. Celebrate him. Mm-hmm. Celebrate him because he's still got family around. So let's lift them up.
Tell the story about your 60th birthday.
Well, very quickly.
He doesn't look a day over...
I know.
14.
14!
Or some multiple thereof.
3 times 14.
Yeah. No, that's only 42.
So either way, I still felt like I was infringing on cultural appropriation by using your very regional dialect. Just you guys don't ever say tournament or bagel, and we'll be cool.
Right.
Yeah.
No. So a few years ago, the perpetrators are in the room. Garner and Parker planned a surprise birthday party for my 60th. They weren't really clever about it.
But because, it involved the Tremé brass band.
But
are you, okay? We'll get into that in a second.
Jump ahead. And so, you know, Parker said, what's Garner's cell phone number? Again, I said, I gave it to you 3 times. Duh. And Garner's going, how come Parker's not returning my call? I said, because, you know, you're planning a surprise birthday party for me. And so I'm going like, these people are not really good at it, but I'm going to act. I'm really going to.
So you literally knew from day zero.
3 weeks ahead. Okay? But I'm acting like I don't know, right? So they trumped me. They did it a week ahead. And I was caught. Totally.
The player got played.
Yeah. My pantaloons were down. So a couple friends kept me playing pool at a local bar and Saturday afternoon. And suddenly these people from my past and my present start showing up at this bar. I'm going, this is so weird.
People from Europe, you know. Like.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What are you doing here?
Oh,
we come here every Saturday afternoon. Bullshit. You're my priest. What are you doing here?
You start bragging about all the people you know.
Yeah. I'm going to start coming here every Saturday because all my friends come here.
By the way, that sounds pretty Nor-Orleanian to be like, look at all the people I know. I'm bragging about it now. I'm the big man on campus. I'm the king now.
Yeah, it was. I'm feeling like the king, and I'm feeling like, my friends, I said, you know, I know a week from now they're planning a surprise birthday party, but don't tell anybody that I know. So they dragged me outside to this brass band, the Tremé brass band. And if you're from here, you revere the Tremé brass band. This is
Uncle
a marching
Lionel,
band.
No longer
Uncle Lionel, who passed, he went on to the great beyond, but I think he's still standing in effigy.
Yeah, they did something really funny to him.
They preserved him. But anyway, this is years before that, and so.
Wait, we're gonna have to get into that, but
yeah.
We're definitely gonna have to get into that.
Is it time for a commercial?
Yeah, no, it's not time for a commercial. I want you to continue. Yeah.
So. I dragged out of the bar 75 of my friends from locally and around the world are standing out in the street, and the band starts up, and I'm going, oh, this is the surprise party. I started to figure it out. I mean, I literally was blown into another dimension. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, when all of a sudden it's like, wow. I don't know what to do, but I'm gonna go with this. And so it's about 6-7 blocks from this bar to my house. And we start a second line. I told you what a second line is.
Yep.
It's a parade.
Yep.
It's a walk-in parade with a brass band. And Lionel's leading it. And the Treme brass band is taking us down the street. And apparently everybody along the street knew about this because of the people, you know, earlier.
Parker, was that you?
No, no, it's just Parker's that people marching. Were going down there, and so they, people knew.
Is this just what happens?
This is kind of what happens.
Oh, my God. What you guys can't hear in the room right now is I queued up, because only a couple of us have headphones, is I queued up Jesus on the Main Line with Uncle Lionel Batiste, and that is happening right now as we continue talking.
And so there we are. I'm marching to that, right? We're walking. We have drinks in our hands. The people are coming out of their houses on both sides and toasting us as we parade down the street. And I can see these lights all blaring from our house and that we're walking towards. And next to me is my priest, who I've known for many years. And he says, and Lionel's blasting away, as you can hear right now. And he says, Toto, when I go and die, I want a parade like this. And I said, well, William, that's very interesting. And I stopped. And I said, and it suddenly hit me. I said, William, is this my birthday or is this my funeral? For a moment, I was not sure which one. And the lights blazing up ahead, you know, and we're all my friends marching along to my favorite music. Well, it turned out to be my birthday. I hope I have as much fun at my funeral.
Knowing you, you will.
Knowing you, it'll be a surprise.
I want to keep this going, but I don't know how now. So someone please tell me.
I think we ought to go back to the very beginning. You want to know about New Orleans?
Yes. Okay. All right.
This is a perfect
segue.
To be a New Orleanian and to have a lot of friends who know a lot more about this than I do.
Right.
But and lucky enough to be the grandson of a very, very well-known New Orleanian, Martha Gilmore Robinson. Mm-hmm. More about her separately, but she took me and her grandchildren to the roots of New Orleans, the churches of New Orleans, the architecture of New Orleans, the preservationist battles of New Orleans. And so that gave us a grounding.
It right.
really did. But one thing I've learned and from some of that grounding is that this city, and I don't mean the state, and I don't mean the you know, the area around, but this city, Orleans Parish, is born on a lie. And to this day, we still prevaricate the truth. I'm not sure that's right diction, but...
Made sense to me.
It's all sort of, sometimes it's a game, sometimes it's a lie, sometimes it's total bullshit, but... It started at the beginning. Bienville and Iberville, the two brothers,
yep.
founded New Orleans.
Yep.
They flummoxed
yep.
Louis the King.
Yep.
Yeah.
This okay, was a, oh yeah, this yeah. was this was a straight up Ponzi scheme.
Yeah,
this
it was.
This
for
was
sure.
straight up real estate speculation.
Right.
It was the tulip trade, and then it was New Orleans.
Right.
It was New France, the Mississippi River. It was like those 1950s, like move out to Levittown. It'll be great out there. Everyone gets a new home, a chicken in every pot, a turkey in every chicken, a turducken in every turducken. No, yes, you're right. I'm so happy you brought that up. This place was a scam.
It was a scam, and luckily the scam worked, or we'd all be sitting in Man Shack right now. Feeding the mosquitoes.
Sitting in what?
Man Shack Pass.
I don't know.
That's where.
Oh God, why do you keep I've never had so much new vocabulary thrown at me. I'm flummoxed.
Uh-huh.
There we go. What's Man Shack?
Man Shack is where, there's a system of lakes that leads up to Lake Pontchartrain.
Right.
And that's how the French originally got to New Orleans.
Right.
But the, if you keep going to the next lake at the top of Lake Pontchartrain, there's a canal that goes and joins to Lake Maurepas. And this was King Louis's engineers and his court's decision that that was the place to found their
the
new
city.
Capital.
The right. city.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they could get there by boat.
Uh-huh.
Because there is a passage to the Mississippi River, not
but,
far.
But you're not on the Mississippi there. River.
Well, we're New Orleans. There's
no,
a
no,
pathway.
No, no, that lake isn't on the Mississippi River, right?
No, it's not on
no. right.
Lake Maurepas not on the Mississippi River, but the engineers, in their wisdom, saw the opportunity that this would be the right place for their new capital.
Right.
But
didn't it seem
but the two brothers, they were already selling lots down in New Orleans, right?
So oh, yes. I remember this. Tell more.
Well,
yes.
So boatloads of French are arriving, you know, new colonists.
Go to the new capital.
Right.
No, go to this one.
Right. They think they're going to Manchac.
Right.
But
I do remember
Iberville and Bienville are saying, no, we'll bring you there later. Meanwhile, you need to build a little house down here. Right? And we promise we're gonna drain that swamp. We're gonna drain that swamp next winter. And right.
For
you don't want to go up there where the Indians and the mosquitoes will bite you.
Oh, my God. All right. So I was told by Garner, Toto's son, like, just talk to my dad. Just talk to my dad. It'll be a riot, they said. You'll have a good time, they said. This is absurd. And it so embodies this city where you're like, no offense, but... You seem a little bit of a scammer yourself, to use my mom's nomenclature. You're
hello.
Like,
hello, hello, hello. Don't ruin a good story with the facts, right?
No, you know what Toto told me on our second date? He said, I want to tell you something. It's not a lie if you know it's a lie.
It's not.
Work on that one for a while. Yeah.
That's a one small step for no, you were definitely not there. We know that. Well, wasn't I? I mean, that for those of you who haven't visited this amazing city and you must now after, I mean, the resurgence is absolutely spectacular. I think I just want to cap it off in like the next 10 or so minutes and talk about that resurgence, because we talked about the beginning, we talked about the way beginning, we talked about, you know, hey, come down to this swamp, I got a good deal for you. Why do I always talk like a 1920s like salesman? I'm like, why, the Duesenberg is the car of the future now. Take that Hindenburg, you'll get across the Atlantic in 7 days. So this might touch on some nerves, because I got a problem with it, the big G word, the gentrification. Mm-hmm. And I, as a New Yorker, I see it happening. I've lived in New York for 20 years now. I see it happening in my neighborhood. I see it happening in other neighborhoods. And 50% of me is like, hey, it's really super great to be able to walk down the streets. And 50% of me is like, hey, guy with the fixie and a beard, go fuck yourself. I don't like you, and I don't need a Starbucks here. How do you guys feel? Because I've had roughly, I'm going to just ballpark it, 25, 30 friends of mine leave Brooklyn, never Manhattan. No one ever seems to leave Manhattan. Leave Brooklyn to move to New Orleans. So do not, if you want to be diplomatic, be diplomatic. But I feel that this city is never really diplomatic. So... what do we think? As the Fritos are chewed.
Right, in the microphone, I might add.
Oh, no, that's fine. This is just adding to the character. There's a lot of character. Yes. There's a lot of character here. There is a lot of character here, and I'm okay with it.
Can you film smiles?
No, but Maria can. So no, Toto, what do you really feel? I mean, I just want to get from the insider's perspective of the outsiders arriving.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's a tough question. It's a very easy answer, but not a true answer.
Mm-hmm.
The real answer is multi-layered.
Right.
Because we as New Orleanians are benefiting from the influx of people. Our property values have gone up 30% to 40%. Our civic life has been enhanced. There's a lot more energy. At the same time, you know that everything's changed. In a way, nothing has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to quantify what we've lost from Katrina, because we've lost. We've lost families. We've lost people.
Right.
We've lost a part of culture.
Right.
Luckily, the community and a bunch of people who work hard have saved our music and have saved a lot of our heritage.
That continuity is real.
Yes.
We have foundational, we have been investing in children ever since Katrina into our music and into our culture. I mean, my foundation that I'm on the board of alone invests between $1 million and $2 million a year back into those children, into the culture, into the culture, you know.
Yeah.
So we really take that seriously. I think it can be a little disheartening sometimes that it's great because all these people are interested in coming here, but then they feel like we need to be fixed. And really, we don't need to be fixed.
Mm.
We understand what joy is. We understand what soul is. We understand what real life is. And we've been living together for a long, long, long time. And we don't need interpretation. And we don't need fixing. If you want to come be with us, be with us. But don't think you have to fix us.
Right.
You know?
Learn our language. Be a who dat. Get some lanyard.
You could possibly edit this out. But I have a question. Because I want to also, is that do you think that investment in doing something like what you're doing is more worthwhile than investment in just bars and stuff like that?
I don't make value judgments on that.
More that goes into one or the other and whether it's more enriching for the community. I'm just interested.
We have just layers and layers of people who are interested in preserving the culture.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I think that's really nice. Yeah.
And also we have partners. We partner with the Grammy Foundation, we partner with Nashville Music Foundation, you know, Jazz and Heritage Foundation. We partner with all these people and we've got tons of great programs going on. Garner's on the board of the Ellis Marcells Foundation.
Yeah, we want to interview you with that.
Which hopefully we will get to talk to in the future, yeah.
Michelle, let me tell you something. When he dies,
who?
He is a culture bearer.
Oh, Ellis?
And mm-hmm. we really take very seriously our culture bearers. And so, you know, we're happy when people come down here and really pay attention to those. But we don't need to be fixed.
Because that's why when Garner mentioned it, it's like, because you know? I think jazz is an amazing thing that also in New York, people really appreciate.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a clear New York, New Orleans jazz hotline. I mean,
absolutely.
Louis's from here.
Yeah.
But Louis lived in Queens.
Exactly.
You know, there we go. It's right there, you know. I forgot who it was. I think it was Miles from Southern Mississippi. But he went up to Chicago, and that's where he started, you know? So you got the Mississippi River, and you got New York, New Orleans. You got this
Memphis.
You got this Chicago. Oh, yeah.
St. Louis.
Memphis, St. Louis. You got this Chicago, New York, Memphis, St. Louis, Mississippi River triangle where jazz goes, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so fascinating. It's so amazing.
And actually, it goes along the lines of the slave trade years ago. When I was on the board of WWOZ, we went down to Cuba to record the music.
I was listening to that on the way in here, and I just picked it. It was the one they were playing some dope ass funk music on the way in, and they're like, "This is OZ," and I'm like, "What?"
Yeah,
yes.
Well, if you don't know OZ, you ought to stick with OZ.
Oh no! I was just flipping through.
You could stream it from all over the world.
It was awesome. It was awesome, and we rounded a corner and we saw the skyline, and it was I think it was Sam Cooke playing.
When you travel across country with somebody, there's certain things you have to agree on, and music is just like you have to
very
pick
important.
A neutral thing that both people can be like, okay, can listen to
right, because like it just it started. I think it was Sam Cooke or Sam and Dave. I don't know who it was, and it was
Sam
playing.
Somebody.
Well, do you know that that music station is? I mean, it has a really fascinating history, but we have shepherded it at the Jazz and Heritage Foundation. We've owned it. I mean, we own
that's
that station.
So cool.
Right.
That's so cool.
But the thing about that station is, I mean, during Katrina, we used the station, the DJs, to identify, you know, one of the things we were worried about is after Katrina, where are the musicians? If we don't have the musicians and the people who know how to...
Do you have New Orleans left?
Right.
If you don't have your music.
That was our concern. So we were all over the country, but we
were trying to figure out...
At the time, I was the treasurer of OZ. I was the board member in charge of the money of OZ.
Right.
And so the board was like working with other people, but we have to figure out where all of our culture bearers are and figure out if
that's
we can
a really
get home.
Culture bearers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You said it before, but now
no,
now
it's important
no, but now that you've said it here.
City.
Well, now that you've said it here, now I get it. It didn't resonate before. I thought you were just using a catchword. Now I get it. It is you.
This is us here. It's the food and the music.
Yeah.
If you have Katrina and people are dispersed, how do you make sure that all comes back and evolves some whatever way it's supposed to evolve? So one of the big things that happened after Katrina music-wise was the Rebirth Brass Band.
Yes.
Who we are friends with. Started their regular gig on Tuesday night at the Maple Leaf. Okay, that's iconic. If you're here on a Tuesday night and you go see them, you will understand why. But once that happened, that for us was, okay, things might get back to normal. You know, we have refrigerators on the neutral ground with Christmas lights on them. And things are really weird here, but now they're playing at the Maple Leaf again. They're doing the Tuesday night game.
And right now, I'm playing the Rebirth Jazz Band, Rebirth Brass Band, Do What You Wanna.
Yeah.
Do what
and
you want.
And this, it just, let's listen to this for a little bit. I know you guys can't listen to it because you don't all have headphones.
But we can hear it in our heads.
Yeah. And if nothing embodies the diverse, crazy, eclectic spirit of this town. I'm getting a little choked up right now. Because well, no, I am stopped for words because, like, this is really, 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 really America. This is the meltingest of meltingest pots. And everything from New Orleans has come in here, melted, and radiated outward. And what are the only true American art forms? Jazz, hip-hop, country music, the blues. Where do they come from? Right here.
Right here.
This
right,
is
right here where we all know how to pop the gator.
Oh God. Now, come on. I'm trying to get like sentimental and serious right here. And you
Gator.
Making, now you're bringing in Pop the Gator.
Gator popping.
I don't even know
gator
what it means.
Gator popping is right in there at the roots.
I'm
of
taking off my
talking.
Headphones. I don't even care anymore. Listen, seriously. Come on, man. Okay, what's gator popping? I
gator
gotta know.
Popping, man.
No, it's what's like, gator popping?
Gator oh popping
is it literally
where,
popping
know,
gators?
So
gators?
Have you
ever like been totally embarrassed by something that you did?
I call that Wednesday.
Yeah, right. But you know, so you go through a catharsis, right? So that's what gator popping is. It's like when you're with a bunch of friends and you're dancing and you're sweating and maybe the floor is wet. You get down on the floor and you pop the gator and you've seen it in some movies, but there's nothing like doing it. And you come up and it's like a catharsis. Like you've been down in the swamps, you've been down in the filth. And you rise up back again, and your friends are all clapping and laughing because you made a fool out of yourself.
But then you just hop back up, and you take a bow, and you go, yep,
right.
I recognize.
You go, okay, now it's your turn, right?
Yep, yep.
And when it's really good, everybody is popping the gator at the same time. That is monumental. That is New Orleans at its essence. That is everybody equal, a man in the street, The king on the float, we're all the same, and we're all at the same level. It might be a really low level. Yeah.
But it's
guess what?
But it's a
it's
level,
more fun at a low level.
But it's a level nonetheless.
Nonetheless.
Holy, I'm going to refrain from profanity, but holy cow, what an amazing journey into this amazing city. Before we leave, Toto and Parker, do you guys have any charities or anything you champion that you maybe want people to donate to?
Garner
to?
My buddy, the Ellis Marsalis.
Would he like to?
Eventually.
The Ellis Marsalis Center is a wonderful charity that Garner's on the board of, and actually, you know, Ellis Marsalis is one of our biggest culture bearers, and it's a super good cause because it's really helping the kids in the Ninth Ward, and they're getting private music lessons, and it is one of the places that is a culture bearer, is concerned with that. And, of course, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, which I'm on the board of.
They don't need the money. Now, the CW Toto Retirement Fund, which is a 501c14,
ladies and
you could give some money to that because we need that.
Mr. Toto Robinson just embodied the most New Orleanian of New Orleanian things by talking over everyone's charities
about himself.
But please, let's all go check out the Ellis Marsalis.
Marie, am I starting to make more sense now?
Oh my God.
I'll meet you there.
But Donna, why are we friends? This is why we're friends.
Ladies and gentlemen, while this cacophony and the Rebirth Brass Band plays, I'm just going to say, welcome to New Orleans. I hope everyone comes down here and contributes to this amazing community.
And Toto's house is a block away from the parade route. You can sit on the front porch.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.